Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to America's Invisible Heroes, a show dedicated to our veterans and their families. Yes, I'm your host, Consuela Mackey, executive director of a grassroots nonprofit organization for veterans called Operation Confidence. For those who may be new to the show, American Invisible Heroes strives to provide a platform for our veterans to be able to share their experiences, heartfelt stories, challenges, and accomplishments. Now, allow me to introduce my wonderful co-host, Air Force veteran and Operation Confidence board member, Matt Davidson, U.S. Army Reserve and board member, Charles Whitehead, Brooke Gadaski, board member and announcer, Taylor Marcellus, board member and also an announcer, U.S. Air Force veteran, Kevin Lenoski, he's a board member and he has a segment on every month, and U.S. Army veteran, Martha Elaine. Elena, and I'm sorry, Martha, for pronouncing your middle name incorrectly. Vera Rayla. She's also the Women's Veterans host for her own segment coming on this month. And I'd like to say good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Now, we're going to turn this over to welcome and bring on Matt.
Okay. It can be very healing for survivors of any kind of a trauma to feel heard, validated, and supported as they recover. This can be especially true for survivors of military sexual trauma, or MST, many of whom may be suffering alone, feeling ashamed, disconnected, or unable to talk with anyone about their experience. That's why during Sexual Assault Awareness Month this April, the VA message to MST survivors is this: we believe you and we believe in you. Throughout the year, VA reaches out to veterans. It encourages them to join a community that listens, understands the potential impacts of MST, believes in survivors' resilience, and can help them continue to heal. During Sexual Assault Awareness Month every year, the VA redoubles its efforts to raise awareness about its free services to support survivors' healing and recovery across a variety of settings. MST refers to sexual assault or sexual harassment that occurs during military service. Service members of all genders, sexual orientations, and backgrounds have experienced MST. MST can affect both physical and mental health, sometimes even years after the experience. It can lead to challenges with strong emotions, sleep disturbances, relationship and trust issues, and unsafe coping behaviors, among others. Many MST survivors do not want to tell others about their experiences. Some may worry that others will judge or not believe them. Others can't imagine how treatment could truly help with healing, so they suffer alone. As a result, many survivors can find it hard to access care even when they need it. That is why veterans make special efforts during the Sexual Assault Awareness Month to raise awareness about MST-related services. If you suffer from MST, go onto your internet and click va.gov. That's va.gov. And you'll find all the information. And I strongly urge you to contact the VA if you have issues with MST, but they have the staff, the people, the professionals that can help you deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Matt. Now, Taylor, would you introduce our first guest?
You got it, Connie. Today's America's Invisible Heroes are featuring the monthly segments From Incarceration to Success, hosted by U.S. Air Force veteran Kevin Lewandowski, and Lifeline for Women Veterans, hosted by U.S. Army veteran Martha Elena Barella. Allow me to introduce Kevin. Kevin was homeless for 28 years after leaving the military. He lived with HIV and had been incarcerated because of his dependence on drugs and alcohol. Kevin says he still remembers sitting in a prison cell, praying for another chance. His darkness and addiction left him with a hardened heart, and through it all, felt alone with no family or friends on the outside. It was during a 3-year stint in 2 California state prisons that he finally turned his life over to God. After serving his sentence and finding permanent housing in Los Angeles, the Philadelphia native found himself terribly alone and on the edge of going back to his former destructive lifestyle, a dark place of depression. That's when a black 5-pound reindeer chihuahua named Miss Bella came into his life. Kevin says since he's had Miss Bella, he can't explain it, but she ripped down that hardened heart and made him cry for the first time in 20 years, good tears. Today, Kevin is a,
You're on mute.
Today, Kevin is job developer, case manager for Volunteers of America, Incarcerated Veterans Transition Program. He has an apartment, district spiritual advisor for the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, Los Angeles, and mentors hundreds of homeless veterans, providing supportive services, leading them back into society. Without further ado, take it away, Kevin.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to my segment. And that's enough about me. I'm going to introduce my guest because I'm very interested to hear a lot of his story as well. Today, my guest is going to be Manuel Gomez, who served in the U.S. Navy and was dealing with some mental health issues. He sought help in the service, but it was too late. Mr. Gomez got out of the military to save his family and entered a registered nursing program. He had a lot of demons in the closet and failed to address them properly. Then he turned to a life of addiction that led him to a prison sentence. While incarcerated, he was fortunate to be incarcerated with a lot of lifers who mentored him and showed him to develop insight, sobriety, and showed him the power of education. When he was released from prison, he searched for employment, helping others. Randy Hardy from Volunteers of America believed in him and gave Manuel an opportunity to be a case manager for justice-involved individuals. He transferred to Elkhart Mental Health Services, where he continues the mission of being advocate for the marginalized. He continued his education and recently got admitted into several MSW programs, such as UCLA and CSULB. So, Manuel, I just want to say that I did speak to Brandy on Thursday, and she had nothing but good things to say about you, and she may be listening. So, hello, Brandy. So, Manuel, please take it away.
Thank you so much. That's an amazing introduction. It's hard to follow, right? As he said, my name is Manuel Gomez. I served in the U.S. Navy from 2005 to 2011. I went on 2 Western Pacific deployments to the Persian Gulf, and I went on a humanitarian deployment to Macronesia. You know, I've always been a small guy, so, you know, as the military, it's a boys' club, and I dealt with a lot of physical trauma. And, you know, for many years in the service, I internalized that trauma and never really sought help. And I noticed that a lot of that trauma was manifesting into anger, which was affecting my family negatively, right? You know, I was having a lot of interpersonal conflicts with my spouse. But when I decided to take the courage and, you know, search for help in the military, you know, through the psychologist, you know, I was ostracized and stigmatized because that service, looking for help was looked down upon, right? I decided to get out, you know, and figured just getting out of the Navy would solve my problems. But, you know, as it goes with mental health, if you don't address it, it becomes worse. And in my instance, you know, I decided to deal with those demons with the methamphetamine addiction, you know. While I was in nursing school, I was, a functioning addict. I was doing okay in nursing school, and I was doing okay in my personal life. You know, things seemed to be okay. But my addiction, you know, spiraled out of control. I started failing my classes, and it led to a two-year prison sentence. Even while I was in prison, you know, I still didn't get it, right? I still felt like I hadn't hit rock bottom. And I continued those same behaviors in that environment. And I turned a two-year prison sentence into a five-year prison sentence. I ended up getting in trouble, and I added some charges, and I ended up doing a year in the secure housing unit where I was on lockdown for 23 hours. You know, and then that isolated space is where I kind of found myself, you know. I was, next door to a lot of guys who had 3, 4, 5, 6 life sentences and who were never getting out and who were pretty hard. They were pretty hard on me, right? They said, "What the hell are you doing, young kid? Like, you got this opportunity, you go home in a few years and you're messing it up and you're back here with us." You know, and I've never had anybody talk to me like, with such truth and such raw, you know, care for me, you know, in this most crazy, isolated environment. You know, they mentored me to become a better version of myself. As soon as I got out of the SHU, I went to Folsom State Prison. And, you know, I carried that mentorship with me. I enrolled in, you know, substance abuse programs, relapse prevention. And I started developing insight and understanding of myself that, you know what, you know, you can end up the rest of your life. Fortunately, I was the general population and I couldn't really seek, you know, psychological services because that in itself, you know, came with a death sentence being on a general population yard. But I found God and I found the priest and I found avenues to really help myself. You know, fortunately, you know, I did all this work. I finally figured out, you know, like I said, I need to be sober and I changed my life. I petitioned my case to the Supreme Court and due to some reasons, they were going to allow me to go home early because, you know, those charges that I got in prison, you know, the officers had manipulated them into some more severe charges. It was just a possession, right? I'm not making it a scapegoat, but basically I could have got 1 year instead of the 4 years that I ended up getting. So I went to the courts and they believed in me. They said, "Hey, you know what? The officers are wrong. They exacerbated your charge. You're right. You deserve that 1 year. You can go home tomorrow," right? Wow. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that day, October 15th, right, of 2018. I'm walking out of the West Gate of Folsom State Prison. I see my family, and I get emotional, right? And I get tackled by police officers and said, "You're not going home. We made a mistake." All that work, all that efforts, all the college courses I took, all those credits to reduce my sentence was gone in an instant. My kids were traumatized forever. I was traumatized forever. And I went in and said, "You still got 3 years left of that sentence. That thing you won in court doesn't mean nothing for us." So for the next 2 months, I fought, you know, and I fought. And luckily the courts forced CDC to let me out on January 16th of 2019. That was a very difficult and horrendous 2 months where I didn't know what my future was. But, you know, everything happens for a reason, right? Because I always look at things positively. And although that was a very...
Uh-oh. I think we lost Manuel. Wow. He'll come back on, hopefully in a few minutes. But that was a heartfelt story he was sharing with us. So moving. Manuel, I don't know what happened. Well,
looks like he's in a car. So,
he's in the car. Okay. Yeah. Well, we're gonna have to move on because of time. But when he comes back on, we'll let him continue where he left off. That was an amazing story. Brooke, we want you to please introduce our next segment and our wonderful guest, who my girlfriend, Martha. Thank you so much for being here on the show today. And I apologize for mispronouncing your last name.
That's okay.
Well, please introduce yourself, and I'm going to have our little announcer, Taylor, who's my little sweetheart there, give a brief introduction, and then we'll let you take it away, girlfriend.
Sounds good.
Taylor, you're muted. Okay. There you go.
So
you're introducing Martha for us.
Yes, ma'am. Let me get this. I apologize for that. Martha Elena Varela is a U.S. Army veteran and has a new monthly segment entitled Lifeline for Women Vets.
And I'm going to let you stop there, and I'm going to let Brooke take over if she doesn't mind.
Okay. Of course, Connie. Ms. Varela is the Women's Veterans Outreach Coordinator, U.S. Army Veteran National Veterans Foundation, Community Outreach and Information Services. Martha has 20 years of nonprofit work experience working with inner city communities. An Army veteran, she was a combat field medic who holds a degree in social work, youth studies, and multicultural studies. She received her MPA from City University, New York, and completed her graduate research at the California Endowment, California's largest private health foundation. The proud mother of two boys and a new grandmother. Martha will introduce her guest, Marine Corps veteran Sylvia Feliciano. Ms. Feliciano is a RYT 500 yoga teacher and has a Master of Public Administration from the prestigious National Urban Fellows Program. She has an extensive background in corporate performance, compliance, and strategic advisement. Throughout her career, her passion has always been the well-being of her community, and this passion would take her to live in India, where she learned of different healing modalities that have been used to heal the mind, body, and spirit for centuries. Some of Sylvia's multiple certifications and training include IRIS Yoga Nidra, Warriors at Ease, Trauma Recovery Yoga, Trauma Yoga for Children, among others. She can incorporate a combination of healing modalities into stress management and emotional intelligence program specific to the needs of a corporation, organization, group, and/or individuals. She also provides emotional intelligence and mindfulness exercises, meditation, and yoga to children. Sylvia's mission is to incorporate emotional intelligence, stress management, and resiliency tools and techniques, education and awareness into her life coaching program, and bring the healing modalities to the world. Her trauma-sensitive approach enables a safe and engaging learning environment, provides on-site workshops and instruction, and seeks to make stress management and resiliency programs even more accessible by partnering with public, private, military, and nonprofit sector organizations. Take it away.
Welcome, Sylvia.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Okay. Martha, you going to take it from here?
Yes. Thank you, Sylvia, for joining us. It's nice to see you. Sylvia and I share a couple of commonalities. We are both veterans, but we also both are fellow alumni of the National Urban Fellows Program. So we both went through the MPA program at City University in New York. Although Sylvia is a native of New York, our paths kind of crossed again here when I joined the National Urban Fellows or the National Veterans Foundation. So thank you, Sylvia, again for joining us. And I just wanted to kind of highlight a little bit about Sylvia's story. As you guys kind of heard, she is a leader in the trauma world and really has dedicated her life to service. And so I just wanted to kind of uplift that story, have Sylvia tell us a little bit about who she is and where she's from, and kind of how we can stay connected and share this great information with others who may be in need. So again, thank you, Sylvia. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Oh, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. So I'm a Brooklyn native, and I had always served as an advocate, always being the voice of the voices. Well, I don't like that terminology, that phrase anymore, but always speaking up for people who weren't speaking up for themselves. always standing for people.
Excuse me, Sylvia, can you bring up your volume a little bit?
Oh, can you not hear me?
Can you
hear me now? Is it better?
That's much better.
Okay, sorry about that. So growing up in Brooklyn, New York, and then I moved to Florida, to Miami, Florida, where I graduated early from high school and needed a waiver from my mom. She had to sign a waiver for me to go into the Marine Corps. I was a tender 17-year-old. And I was motivated because a lot of the guys in high school told me I couldn't go to the Marine Corps because it was for men only. So I set out to prove them wrong. I did 2 active years and, of course, the 6 inactive years for the contract. But Matt alluded to MST. And this is actually the first time I'm going public, you know, in a forum of people I don't know to even talk about my own MST. It was something that I didn't share. It was one of the reasons why I got out early. I didn't want to experience the continuous sexual harassment and sexual assault. It was very well known that women didn't have the power in the military, and if you did say something, you weren't going to be believed. You were going to be ostracized. And so I didn't tell anybody. It took me 25 plus years to even address it. I didn't even know that I experienced PTSD. I had a breakdown just talking about it at the VA just recently. And that's when I decided to start talking more about it. Few of my friends know that I experienced it. And it was through my own healing journey, becoming a life coach and getting into yoga and meditation, that I started to find my own voice. I realized that I was this staunch advocate for others because I wasn't a staunch advocate for myself. And so I compensated that by being that voice for others. And so it's now that I'm realizing that I did that because I diminished my experience because it wasn't as bad as so-and-so. You know, I know so many different women who have experienced MST. My own roommate in Hawaii was raped. And so it was a very real reality there. And to think that if I said anything, I could end my career. So I chose to end it myself and use pregnancy as an excuse. I didn't tell anybody because I was so scared. And because I left 20 days shy of my 2 years, and I had the choice of when I wanted to get out, I was no longer considered a veteran. And that wasn't a judgment in of itself. And so I didn't even qualify. When I went to the VA and I had this breakdown in the parking lot and I had a breakdown with Women's Center, they couldn't even provide me services because I didn't qualify for them. And so it was very, that in of itself is traumatic, right? To have someone grill you and tell you you don't rate. Oh, no. That is very traumatic. And so I know that there was discussion the very first time I went public, the very first time I went public with it last year. There was a senator who's actually looking into, I think she's doing some research of how many men and women have actually left early their military careers because of it. It's a really real thing that we don't really talk about. And so thank you, Matt, for opening up that way, because I had no idea I was even going to mention that. I had no idea. But
thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me here. But aside from that, I love my military career. I have 2 sons who are in the Marine Corps, and their father was in the Marine Corps as well. And my daughter wanted to join, but I wasn't having that. So she's a professional model, doing very well on her own. But the experiences that I had, the leadership skill sets, you know, the camaraderie, all of those things that we experience within the military is very special. You know, despite what I experienced, there are very real key leadership and skill sets that I took with me into, you know, the civilian workforce. And it allowed me to really propel to leadership levels at rapid pace. And so I have served in public service in a variety of leadership positions, compliance officer, internal controls officer, systems lead, and strategic advisor for the city of Seattle. While I was there with the city of Seattle, I was also very engaged with the Race and Social Justice Initiative, trying to eliminate institutionalized and systemic racism within the organization and in the community. And it was through that that I realized I had no stress management skills. I was always on alert, hypervigilant, and in stress. And I thought that I thrived in stress mode. I thought I was my best performer in stress mode. And I didn't know that it was harming my mind and my body. And it was after my second emergency surgery, because I developed hernias in my digestive system, that the surgeon said, this is stress-induced, and you have to find a way to manage your stress. And so that's where I started doing yoga and found meditation. And then my yoga mentor was putting together a workshop to teach people how to become instructors. And because I felt the benefits of it, I wanted to teach it so I can bring it back to my community, especially the marginalized, underserved, and underrepresented community. I don't see or didn't see, because there's a huge movement, there's a lot of representation now, but didn't see the didn't see yoga and meditation as something for them. There's a stereotype of who does and who yoga is for. And so I became a yoga instructor. And then when she found out that I was a Marine veteran, she said that there was this really particular program that targets military members, and it's called IRES, the Integrated Restoration Yoga Nidra, which combines the traditional yoga nidra practice, the ancient practice of yoga nidra, with neuroscience. And it was something that I definitely wanted to do because I wanted to serve the military. I wanted to bring that to military members, especially because I have my son's profession. And so I became certified in level one for that and started teaching it. I realized then that this was my calling. I didn't care for corporate performance anymore. I didn't care about corporate America. Despite the six figures that I was making, like, it didn't matter to me. For me, it was now, because I've always been about serving the community. I've always been about bringing resources. I was stretching myself thin because my day job, while it was very lucrative monetarily, it wasn't fulfilling me. And so I was stretching myself thin, trying to find different ways to serve others and have an impact. And so I decided to become an entrepreneur and leave corporate America as of 2 years ago. And I started Solace Mind with a very with a goal to bring it to people, to bring it to people who don't see the different resources as accessible. And I wanted to make it accessible to them. And so that's how I started Solace Mind.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story, Sylvia. And, you know, that's exactly, you know, what we have kind of communicated to each other is that, you know, in this world of female veterans who have experienced this trauma and experienced some of the injustices, you know, how important it is to have healing programs, healing therapy programs, having different, you know, a different platform of modalities that are available to help people in their healing journey. So I want to thank you for sharing that as well, kind of what motivated you to do this work. And so, you know, in my role at the National Veterans Foundation, you know, taking calls from females like yourself and others, it had become my goal to kind of uplift the stories and share the stories of veterans like yourself, veterans like myself, who are working, you know, tirelessly day to day to help kind of that bigger cause and that, the bigger service to the community. So I wanted to, you know, definitely invite you here to share that. So again, thank you. For giving us that information now. Can you tell us a little bit about how we can get in contact with you, you know, your social media handles and sort of where and how, if someone wanted to connect with you to learn more about your program specifically for them, how could hold of you or reach you?
Absolutely, thank you, Pat. Yes, so I provide life coaching, and it's trauma informed, and I take a trauma informed emotional intelligence approach, so that it is really identifying limiting beliefs and behaviors that make people feel stuck, despite where they are in their professional career. They can be high achievers or just beginning, and they just feel stuck. They just feel like there's something more, and they don't know how or where to start. So they can go to my website. It's thesolacemind.com, thesolacemind.com. But in conjunction with my life coaching, I incorporate different healing modalities. So I'll incorporate yoga, sound healing, which is amazing. I'll also incorporate meditation, guided meditation, and Reiki healing. And I'm going to be providing hypnotherapy as well, because I have experienced all of the array of healing modalities myself, and wanted to make that accessible to others as well. So
we sure want to thank you, Sylvia, for coming on today and sharing that heartfelt story and all of your successes that you've accomplished through the years. And of course, please repeat your contact information again, and then we're going to turn it over to Martha for a second, and then we'll move on. We see Manuel has come back on. We want his story to complete before we move on to almost the end of the show. So can you give your information again, please?
Yes. So the website is thesolacemind.com.
Speak a little louder. There's something wrong with the volume there. I think your mic is not up close enough.
Oh, okay. So the website is thesolacemind.com, thesolacemind.com. And then on my Instagram, it's Beautiful Solace Mind. And on Facebook, it's The Solace Mind.
Solace Mind. Okay, great. And thank you again. And we want you to come back and maybe bring some of your successful clients on too, so that, or even show a video so we'll know exactly what it is that you're thank off. You. And that would be, wouldn't that be great?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Martha, please tell us about your segment that's going to be featured every month before we turn it over back to Manuel. Uh-oh, did she freeze up? Martha, can you hear? Okay, there we go. Can you hear us? I don't know what the problem is. Maybe it's your internet.
Okay. And, you know, as I mentioned in my role, hello, can you hear me?
It's coming in and out.
Hello, how about now?
I can hear you now. Keep talking.
Okay. So I really was excited to have this conversation with you, Consuela, to really look at ways that we could support female veterans. And when we look at, you know, how we can mentor and support one another from this peer-to-peer network, that's one of the things that the National Veterans Foundation has found successful in their work reaching veterans. There was still something missing in terms of being able to connect and reach the female veterans. As Sylvia explained herself, you know, for many of our female veterans, they don't consider themselves veterans. And I was like that as well. I disconnected for well over 20 years, just living life. We're busy with our families, our children, but we need to figure out new ways to connect. And so by having a platform, whether it's radio, video, to really uplift the stories of those female veterans that have come through that point of stress and crisis to get to a point of resiliency. And for those like Sylvia who have dedicated their lives to giving back to those coming behind them, you know, is admirable. And we need a platform to highlight those female veterans as inspiration and motivation, the others that are maybe in a struggle or in a crisis at the current time. And so it's really exciting for me, as I have been working in this avenue, this space for about the last year, to just really have a core group of powerful, leaders like Sylvia and other females that are really just living life every day, doing this great work, but that need to be highlighted and uplifted for the work that they do. So that's sort of what the goal was of what we were thinking of for a lifeline for female vets as the extension for the work that we've, kind of do to help support and, connect with our other female veterans.
Well, we welcome you to the team, girl. We're so happy to have you. And it's exciting. And Sylvia, once again, we thank you too. And please come back and share more of your wonderful ventures that you've gone on and the accomplishments that you're making. Women veterans need to hear this. It's important for this show to acknowledge the women veterans that have sacrificed just as much as our male soldiers to give us our freedom. And we need to make sure that they're highly acknowledged, especially on this show, Americans Invisible Heroes. Don't you all agree?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Manuel, I see that you're back.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, a symbol of how my life has been, right? Not smooth.
Oh, no, you gave a marvelous presentation, and you wanted to wind it up, and you were right in the middle of telling us.
We're going to let you out again.
What'd you say, Kevin?
They weren't going to let him out.
Oh, yeah, right. And that was heartfelt, too.
You're on the edge of my seat trying to
hear
the
rest. Yeah, that was a good story. We only have a few more minutes, so come on, tell us how that turned out, Manuel.
Yeah, I'll make it real quick. So, you know, because of those charges that I incurred on the inside, I ended up doing an extra 3 to 4 years, right? I spent that time, you know, educating myself, learning everything about the VA system, helping my veterans on the inside learn how to do their benefits, right? I didn't realize that all that would be, you know, a blessing in disguise, because when I got out, I had these 3 associate's degrees. I had all this education from relapse prevention and substance use, because I became, you know, kind of a self-taught a substance abuse counselor on the inside, right? So when I got out, you know, I stumbled upon a wonderful case manager similar to Kevin, who saw my talents and recommended me to go to Volunteers of America, where this wonderful, amazing lady, Brandy Hardy, heard my story. I was in tears in her interview room, and she gave me a job as a case manager for the Office of Diversion and Reentry. I know for the second time, we can't really explain what ODR is, but definitely go check out ODR. It's a phenomenal model we have here for reentry here in California. Anyways, long story short, you know, all that education, all that training landed me this amazing job, you know, as a case manager, helping individuals such as myself who deal with mental health issues and substance use issues. I'm able to utilize my story to motivate them and help them reenter and succeed society. You know, and I fell in love with social work. Absolutely. It's my calling. It was what I was born for. I never feel like I have a job. You know, I was recruited by an organization called Alcott Mental Health, offered a little bit more money, offered a little bit more opportunities. And I was mentored by an amazing licensed clinical social worker. Her name is Melissa Mario McGran. She's out in New York. She left us a few months ago to go back home. But they ignited this fire in me. And I never thought I could apply to graduate school. And they told me, hey, go apply to graduate school. And I did. And I got into UCLA. I got into Long Beach, which are 2 of the best programs I hear. So Cal Berkeley, UCLA, and Long Beach are considered the top 3 programs in California. And not only did I get into UCLA, I got elected to be their graduate opportunity fellow, you know, which comes with a huge scholarship.
Oh, my God.
So hopefully, you know, as veterans, we have Voc Rehab, so most of it's paid for. But just to be able to have that recognition and that acknowledgement that my lived-in experience is valuable in this space, right? That my story serves a purpose of motivation for others. You know, it's been a beautiful journey. I'm very happy to share it, you know. I do want to make sure I emphasize that I did make a series of choices. I hold myself 100% accountable for entering the carceral space. I chose illicit coping skills, and I learned from that lesson, you know. We understand that there's a huge conversation about unjust sentences here in California, right? Mm-hmm. Mine was a mental health issue. I had no knowledge of the VA court for individuals such as myself, right? You know, but at the end of the day, I still expose myself to an unjust system, right? So I want to make sure that, you know, I emphasize on the fact that it was a hard lesson. I learned a lot from it. I rehabilitated myself. And now I serve the community, not only as a case manager, but I help individuals with benefits. Any type of little knowledge I can help them from reentering society, that's what I'm there for. And I'm so happy and so blessed to be able to share my story and to show others that we have to remove the stigma that we have surrounding mental health for individuals who are Hispanic, such as myself. We never talk about our emotions, and it led to severe consequences in my instance, you know. But
we're proud of you over here. I think what you've gone through is just amazing, and how the outcome came. And we want you back for sure, especially on Kevin's
Kevin's going to have you back.
Yeah, it's the perfect title of his segment too, of incarceration to success. So that's you. And I want Matt to chime in because, Matt, you also have an extensive background with incarcerated vets. Can you give him a little bit of feedback on what your involvement has been through the years?
I would just want to say to Mr. Gomez, congratulations on your strength and your fortitude and your focus and your commitment to helping others. You are a strong individual. I hope you realize that, and you are appreciated.
Thank you. I want to
tell Mr. Gomez about you, though, real quick.
Okay.
Your background with incarcerated.
I served 16 years serving veterans incarcerated in federal and state level prisons. And we got a lot of good things done, and we helped a lot of people. And it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. And I'm sure you feel the same.
That's so good.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And real quick, I want to make sure that I let everybody know I couldn't have done this with my amazing spouse of 14 years who has stuck through thin and thin, through the military, through incarceration. She was pivotal to my success. She's been my study partner, my mentor, my motivation. Her name is Charisma. I couldn't do it without you, honey.
Oh, that's so sweet. Wonderful. We got to have her on. I love her name.
She'll be on next.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
Charles, did you have anything you wanted?
I would like to have her on to hear how she dealt with the struggle, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's her important.
Point. Yeah, so
that's real.
I'm talking about that manual.
Yeah, that's great. And, Charles, did you have anything to ask Manuel before we move on to your segment?
The question I have is, why do the courts say that you have your time is served, but then the prison said no? In 30 seconds, if you can tell us why that, how that worked out, because that doesn't seem right to me. It's something wrong with that.
Yeah. Real quick, there's two sets of judicial systems in incarceration, right? There is the administrative, which in my instance, carried a one-year sentence. I was in possession of narcotics while incarcerated. That carries a one-year CDC 115 administrative hearing. Now, sometimes officers elect that to prosecute that, and that carries a four-year sentence. It's mandatory to be concurrent, and you have to do the whole thing complete, right? In the civilian world, that would be maybe a six-month sentence, right? So just by the nature of incarceration, a six-month misdemeanor turns into a five-year misdemeanor.
Wow.
Right.
So I was able to go into the courts and dismiss the administrative component, which alleviated a year of my sentence, in addition to my educational credits, which alleviated an additional 2 years. So I was able to cut down that additional 4 years down to 1 year after all the work that I did on the inside.
Mm. And then the CDC, they do what they want anyway, because I was supposed to get out in November of 2012, they helped me this is administrative paperwork, mistake, this and that. And they kept me in there for like 4 or 5 more months because I had a lawsuit against them. And they knew I had the lawsuit, so they kept me.
Mean, huh? That's so bad.
Because they can.
Well, we have to move on, but I have a question. How come Veterans Court didn't chime in there somewhere? I mean, how does that work, real quick?
I was completely oblivious to it. I didn't even know it existed. Nobody offered it at court, you know. It was in 2014 when it was beginning. But it's just, my sentence was harsher because I was a veteran. They said I should have known better.
But no. Veterans Court didn't come, you didn't know anything about it though, huh?
Nope.
Wow. Veterans Court isn't all that great anyway. They really.
Really?
No, it's not all that great.
They don't make much of a difference.
They don't make that much of a difference for you.
Right.
It's about the judge, you know, really, the judge and the DA. Who you get, you know.
Okay, well, we sure want to thank you. It's been quite enlightening and quite informative with you, Manuel, and you, Sylvia. And like I said, you guys have to come back. I mean, our listeners need to know more. I'm not a veteran. I'm just a civilian. A mom and a grandmother too, Martha, and just trying to do my part to help our invisible heroes. There's so many veterans out here that has made tremendous contributions and they're not recognized, you know? And we want to make sure on this platform that we're doing our part. And I thank you so much because it's so important for our listeners to know what's going on. And it's educational too, you know? So I really want to thank you. Charles, let's move on to hot news real quick.
Hot news. All right. Today's hot news starts off with OP Love. OP Love is a nonprofit organization of professional photographers that offers free photo sessions, images, and prints to our military undergoing a deployment or coming home from one. As of September 2016, all deployments and tours overseas with the time frame of at least 4 months, that's for a deployment session, qualify for OP Love services. If your loved one is already overseas and has less than 3 months time before returning to the U.S. states, you may only participate in a homecoming session. The deployment must be a minimum of 4 months in length, and only two sessions are allowed per deployment year. The first is either a pre- or mid-deployment session, and if it's a mid-deployment session, there must be at least 60 days left of the deployment to qualify. Then there's pre- and mid-deployment sessions, of course. Before your loved one leaves, or if you are in the middle of a deployment, the photographers provide a pre-patriotic portrait session with your family, and 15 prints from your session will be shipped directly overseas to that spouse of yours. This gift is about boosting the morale of our military while they're away from their loved ones and giving them photos to look at and hold on to. They have a homecoming session. The photographers will be at the reunion of seeing your loved one once again at the actual time and place of the homecoming. They'll also provide you with 15 digital image downloads of that homecoming session, and it's for free. These sessions are designed to capture the emotional moments of reuniting with your loved one after being apart for months or years sometimes. And then there's the fallen loved ones. It is literally the worst case scenario when this happens. At OP Love, they completely understand that there is very little consolation that can be done to help these unimaginable times. But as an organization that benefits military members and their families, they feel that they have to do something. Please contact Tony, T-O-N-E, at oplove.org. That's T-O-N-E-E at oplove.org. And quickly, would you like to be a well-paying job as a drone pilot? The market for drone operator jobs is only going to get bigger as the years go by and the UAV technology becomes more advanced. So if you're looking to turn your dream into a hobby, into a career, and find a drone pilot job, don't hesitate. Now is your chance to do something really special. If you'd like to know more about this opportunity, call area code 562-484-5049. That's 562-484-5049, that is. Thank you.
We have a resource page on Operation Confidence website, so we'll make sure that we post it on there. But we're running down to the last few minutes here. Matt, do you want to give your segment real quick, please?
Yes, I'll do it as quick as I can. Most of our listeners probably have no remembrance of World War II, and I can understand that. But I want to talk about one of the greatest heroes of that era, and his name was Audie Murphy. And Audie was involved with two separate careers. His U.S. Army service covered 9 World War II campaigns fought by the 3rd Infantry Division in Tunisia, Italy, France, the Rhineland, and Central Europe. He lied about his age to enlist in the United States Army in 1942. Before his 20th birthday, he earned every Army Combat Award for valor available during his period of service, and he had risen to the rank of First Lieutenant. On the day he was awarded the Medal of Honor for his January 1945 actions in France, he was considered to be America's most decorated World War II soldier and received national recognition through Life magazine that made him their cover story. His superior offices, as well as the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, encouraged Audie to apply for enrollment at West Point and offered to provide any assistance and influence needed to help him be accepted as a cadet. Murphy eventually passed on the opportunity of enrollment, in part because of limitations resulting from war injuries. At the end of his active Army service, he was given 50% disability classification and transferred to the Officers Reserve Corps. The psychological effects of the war remained with him for the rest of his life in the form of combat stress. Wow. Although the military did little for Murphy's post-war stress, he was publicly forthcoming about it in hopes of prodding the government into providing better treatment and medical benefits for other veterans suffering the same issues. Can you imagine 50% disability classification after being wounded so many times, a life of terrible combat stress, and all of his decorations? I know of veterans now who have far less than that, who are getting 100% classifications.
Wow.
At any rate, Audie Murphy died in 1971 in a private air crash, and we will never see his like again.
Thank you so much for that. That is so heartfelt. And that's some of the sad stories that we have to learn about. But thank you so much, Matt, for sharing that. We're winding down now. Brooke, can you give us our last part of the show, please?
Sure. Before Ms. Connie closes, I would like to remind our listeners about our amazing advertisement rates. We have 10-second and 30-second advertisement slots available. Please email info@operationconfidence.org for more information. The email again is info@operationconfidence.org. Also, I'd like to inform our viewers and radio listeners about Amazon Smile. When making your next purchase on Amazon, please go to Amazon Smile and type in Operation Confidence in the Choose Your Organization donation box. Amazon will make a small donation to Operation Confidence.
Thank you so much, Brooke. And as always, we want to remind our listeners that our goal for the show is to raise awareness about Operation Confidence mission. And that's to provide stable housing with a wide range of supportive services, including employment opportunities for veterans, especially those who are disabled and have experienced homelessness. So if you want to get involved with our grassroots efforts, please contact us at info@operationconfidence.org. And also, we want you to visit our website and go to our resource page. Make sure you go to that page. We have some amazing resources for our veterans. This concludes our show for today. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. And make sure you tune in next Sunday between 2:50, 2:51, something like that. Say goodbye to everyone.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Stay safe.
What about you, Charles? I like that, Charles. He does everything. I love that. Thank you so much. And right. Thank our guests. We really appreciate it. You guys have been amazing.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.